University, WEAA, Baltimore.
Good evening and welcome to the WEAA Afro First Edition. I'm Sean Yoes, your host this week. We are starting off the conversation with Chris Broughton, who is a syndicated blogger with the Chicago Sun-Times. One of his blogs, Brown Man Thinking Hard. We've had him on before, wanted to bring him back. Chris, welcome back to First Edition.
Thanks, Sean. Glad to be back.
Yeah, man. I specifically, when I was talking to Corey about putting together this show, it was actually, we started talking about it a few weeks ago, and it was kind of at the tail end of the healthcare ruckus that was going on across the country, and I'd had a couple of shows where I really was thinking about and talking about Obama's leadership in this area, and it made me want to speak specifically to where we are about 9 months into the presidency of Barack Obama. And I thought you'd be a great guy to have on to talk about that from kind of a different perspective than the normal kind of political focus that we have during these conversations on First Edition. So let me just ask you to start off, Chris. I mean, what are your thoughts about the Obama administration, Barack Obama, his presidency, 9 months in general? What are you feeling about what's going on with with Barack Obama?
I think overall, as a president, he's doing as good a job as pretty much any president we've had before to this point, as far as getting off to a strong start and trying to get a lot of his signature programs in place.
Mm-hmm.
His particular style that he uses as a leader, though, with some of the challenges that we faced that he probably didn't anticipate while he was running for office,
mm-hmm.
has given us, at least from a onlooker's perspective, a sort of an uneven view. You know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes we don't really know
where
he is, but as a consensus builder, he's got to give the public and his Congress enough time to actually think about things, to chew on things, so that they can give him something more than the party line. So to that extent, you know, I think his style is something we're going to have to get used to.
I think that's a great point. And I think that is one of the planks. I think that's at the kind of the heart of where I'm coming from and where some of my discomfort discomfort over what has gone over the last few weeks kind of originates from is Obama's style. That's an interesting concept. Let me start off by saying that, you know, all throughout his campaign, I used this show as a platform to I'll say it like this, because I'm not one of those guys who believes journalists are objective. No, we're human. We're men and women, and we're human. We have thoughts, and we lean one way or we lean the other. And quite frankly, I used First Edition during the Obama campaign to put the most positive spin on his brother's campaign as I could possibly do. But it is, to say the least, I have been disappointed about how he has led during this whole healthcare issue. And let me I'll get back to that. But let me go back to another point before I get into my thoughts about his leadership in the healthcare debate. What is your sense, Chris, of how the media is covering him now? There was much made about the fact that there was a lot of media bias in Obama's favor, and also a lot made of some of the media attacks on him during the Jeremiah Wright incident and during the William Ayers incident. So 9 months into his presidency, what are your thoughts on how the media has covered President Barack Obama?
They started out on a high note. He's a new president. They were excited. He's an exciting guy, fairly easy to cover. Historic moment. I mean, I kind of got tired of hearing the first African-American president. Right. And after a while, they gave that phrase up. But one of the things the media has to do is they've got to keep your eyeballs, whether it's TV or newspapers. They've got to have something to talk about that gets our interest. And I put on my blog this week, reading the health care bill. Nobody wants to read that. Right. They want something that has either a little controversy in it or looks like there's something going on that has some kind of emotional resonance. Right. So the media's got to do something to gin up interest when there really isn't anything going on, which is one of the reasons why I think with this healthcare debate, you're hearing about such dramatic swings in where we are, where he is as far as his support on the ground, when in reality, the people who were for him are pretty much still for him. The people who were against him are pretty much still in their camp.
That's another cogent thought. That's another cogent point. I do believe that. And you're right. I mean, the reality that we deal with now with this 24-hour news cycle, with the explosion of cable news, blogging, I mean, there's no space for dead air at all. There's no space for the mundane. Everything has to be in your face, it seems like. Everything has to be explosive. Everything has to be exciting. It's like the nation's attention span is shortens. And the media continues to act accordingly. Or maybe it's the other way around. Maybe it's the attention span of the media that shortens. And the American public is, I don't know which one is, the chicken or egg. But I think you're correct. The reality is that Obama's supporters are in his camp. His detractors are far more vocal now. And that's an issue that I want to get into also later in this conversation, the issue of race and his detractors. But
one other thing about the media, and I actually did a little series on the punditocracy is what I call it.
Punditocracy.
Earlier in the year, because the reality for me is, I wouldn't be a blogger if it wasn't for Barack Obama's candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got my interest, and I got tired of hearing from friends and relatives misinformation. So I decided they were going to have a place they could go to hear the real story on what was going on. Mm. And that's basically how I got to doing this on a pretty regular basis. The thing that I found in some research on that particular series was one of the journalists that I was looking into said one of the reasons why journalists can get so negative is because if they're going to go out on a limb and be positive, they better be 150% sure they're right.
Mm.
Otherwise, if it doesn't work out and their prediction is wrong, they're not seen as objective anymore. So it's much easier to be a critic, and that's one of the reasons why when things look like they're wavering like they are now, everybody and their grandmother's out there telling you why he should have done it a different way or why it's not working.
You know, I think that it's another great point. I mean, I think that when I covered Obama through the campaign, and not only covered him through this radio show, but also obviously in print in the Afro, I was in Denver, I was in D.C. during the inauguration, and wrote about his campaign all through the primaries. But this show was kind of that venue that you spoke of, was the opportunity to really get it right and bring the truth to the people about what's going on with this cat's campaign, and I wanted to just kind of give people an insight into how it was evolving from the ground as I was reporting on it. So let's go back to this healthcare issue. You know, I remember, and I've said this on the show before. I remember there was a meeting in January where there was a lot of the stakeholders in the healthcare industry came to the White House, and they had this meeting. And I remember after the meeting, specifically, now her name is slipping my mind. Melody, can't remember her last name. She's one of the president's chief aides in the White House. She spoke to the media after this meeting, and I remember thinking to myself, what is she just, she didn't say, she said, she didn't say anything. She literally, she was very, very pleasant, very attractive woman, very articulate. Hate to use that phrase, but, but she didn't say anything. And it really gave me, made me concerned. It set off an alarm inside my brain that said, this may not be going the way it should be going. And I understand, and it's been drilled into all of us, that Obama's biggest lesson from Hillary and Bill Care back in 94, from that failed attempt to bring universal health care to the United States, was that they crafted legislation and they gave it to the Congress and they said, deal with this, okay? I get that. Obama didn't want to make the same mistake, so this time he put it in the hands of the Congress and let them draft the bill. I think that has been I won't say catastrophic mistake, but it's been a significant miscalculation, I will say, on the part of the Obama administration. I don't think as we see it evolving that it was an either or proposition. I think that there was a middle ground, which Obama is expert at finding, that could have been struck, that didn't happen in this situation. And I think because there is no specific plan that came out of the Obama White House, it has allowed his detractors, it has allowed the Republican Party to create whatever plan they want to create and attack pieces of it and get out in front on the issue far more effectively than the Democratic Party did.
You basically you read my mind. The way that Obama and his people have approached this, it's almost as if they're herding cats in a way, you know. And I don't know if you know, I'm not really an animal person, but you can't really herd cats. You feed them and they'll come to you.
You're right.
And that's basically what the Congress is doing. You know, give us something, and we may think about giving you what you want. But sometimes you can go overboard when you study history. You know, Bill and Hillary, they did, you know, keep things too private. But, you know, Obama is obviously a student of history. He's really, to me, at the point where he's got everybody and their grandmother drawing lines in the sand around him.
Right.
I just
read
this morning, the Congressional Black Caucus is out there. We got to have the public option or else. The progressives are out there. You got to do this or else.
Right.
Everybody's telling you what the president needs to do, but he's not telling us what he's going to do. I think that's the disconnect. That's the thing you're feeling that you're not feeling good about.
And what is happening also on that same tangent is that he's telling people what he's not going to do as opposed to what he's going to do. I'm not going to take your health care from you if you like it. I'm not going to raise the rates. But what are you going to do for me? And I think that is the overarching message from the American people. What is it going to look like? What is it that you're trying to do? America, the vast majority of Americans understand that the health care / insurance, medical insurance companies need reform in this country. I think people, we get that. But
all sides of the debate agree. You're absolutely right.
But what is it going to, but how do we get there and how much is it going to cost? And he has not been able to really come forward and articulate that. And because of that, he has allowed all, not just the Republicans, but the left also, his own party, to define this debate for him. And,
exactly. And
for me, what I don't understand, Chris, is that Obama ran on healthcare as one of his main planks of his campaign. He told over and over again the poignant stories about his mother dying and having to struggle with insurance companies. He talked about how much this meant to him personally, and for him to get out hustled on this issue of all issues, I don't understand that.
A friend of mine called me about 2 weeks ago. He was at a healthcare protest rally in front of David Scott's office here in Georgia, Representative Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And he held up his telephone. Chris, listen to the crowd. Listen to these people.
Mm.
And the person who called me had been an ardent Obama supporter. He'd been down at the campaign headquarters in his area, not just on weekends, but weeknights, with his wife and child. I mean, they really worked hard to get this man elected president.
Right.
So I jumped in the car, went over to the rally with the idea of just getting to see in person what these people look like without a TV camera in between me and them.
Mm-hmm.
I went over to the people who were doing the protesting, were waving the signs, don't tread on me, etc., and basically told them who I was, that I was a blogger, and I just wanted to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And in the conversation with the people after they, you know, got through with their trademark slogans, we actually started to talk a little bit, and I tried to listen. And one of the things that hit me as we were talking is the thing you're talking about, that the president has talked about a general idea, but he hasn't been specific enough. So I kind of threw something out there. I said, you know, one of the things the president has to do is tell you that we're going to go from a all the profit you can make healthcare business to a this is a fair profit healthcare business. If he does that, because that's what they're doing with all the caps and the limits, and we're going to cover everybody, you're saying this industry now is going to have a model that's a lot more like your public utility. If he would explain it in that way, that the same way we looked at electricity years ago when everybody didn't have it and we electrified the entire country,
right,
and the people who lived in the sticks, like my grandmother, paid the same amount for power that people in cities did, even though it cost more to deliver that power out to small outlying areas,
right,
we changed as a nation. We said everybody deserves it.
Mm.
That's where we are on health care. But to say that means that you're going to have to say something definitive that could shake markets, could tell people something that he doesn't think they're ready to hear yet.
Right.
But I think he's got to do that. I don't know what he's going to talk about on Wednesday,
yeah,
but he has got to do more than talk about Senator Kennedy. I mean, it's nice to think about Kennedy. He did dedicate his life to this.
Sure.
Particular policy issue, but we want to know what Barack Obama is going to do.
Well, very well said. I mean, and that's what we're looking for. We're looking for the guy who we put so much trust in during the course of his campaign. There so much hope was generated, so much goodwill was generated during the campaign. We're looking for that same kind of spark, I guess. And to be quite honest, Chris, Maybe that time is past. Maybe, and when I say that time is past, I don't mean his presidency is doomed. What I'm saying is that the moment of the campaign, that was a moment in time that was historic, and that was a moment in time that we'll always be able to remember. Those who observed it, those who were witnesses to it, those who participated in it. But now he's president, and now the hard work comes. So the euphoria is fading, and now it's time for the hard work, and now it's really time for him to make history. So now he has to step up and be the leader that we all believe that he is, you know, or all his supporters believe that he is. I want to touch on a couple of subjects. I want to get to the issue of race, but quickly, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing also is that the healthcare debate has obviously sucked the air out of the room when it comes to everything else that we're dealing with politically these days. I think a couple of other things, underlying issues that have become underlying issues: the stimulus package, the Wall Street bailout, the GM bailout. These issues were things that Obama inherited, and his administration handled them to the best of their ability. And we're seeing that he's been effective to a great extent with GM and the other automakers. We're seeing a turn in that situation. We're seeing a better day, a better time on Wall Street. The stocks have gone up. The stimulus package to some people's observation, has started to work. We're seeing an ending to the recession, even though we got some bad news this week with unemployment ticking up a bit and mm-hmm. moving up to a level that we haven't seen since 1983. But I don't think that we've seen that Obama has been given enough credit for these areas, which were massively important when it was going down, that he hasn't been given enough credit for handling these situations that he inherited. It's been just the opposite. It's kind of like there's been this cumulative effect that the Republican Party and the opposition has kind of seized upon and just kind of ran with. And this is perhaps caused a deterioration in his poll numbers over the last couple of months.
Obama instinctively has a need to talk to you about the hard things, the bad things first. He's that kind of guy. He's a self-described pragmatist.
Hmm.
He's going to tell you what the facts are about the situation and then try to soberly outline what I think we need to do to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good way to think about it. That's the way that we want them to be doing it behind the scenes. But there's a certain amount of showmanship that goes with the job.
Sure.
There's a certain amount of storytelling that he and his people have got to be doing hourly.
And
because
better.
The thing about the healthcare debate, and I know we're moving on from that, it's as close as we've ever gotten to having something this monumental happen.
Absolutely.
But the way it's being talked about, it's as if, you know, they're doing nothing. You know, they're not in control of the storyline the way they were with the campaign, where they could boil down everything to a "yes, we can" slogan. And I don't know if the people who were in charge of his marketing are in charge of anything in the White House, or they've been kind of relegated to second-tier status. That's one thing that I'm wondering. You know, who's actually
telling the story?
Doing the storytelling from a master storyteller standpoint. You know, this is our story this week, and these are the smaller stories that are going to dovetail with it, so that when we all are telling our stories, it sounds like we're all reading from the same book.
Wow.
I know it sounds juvenile, but
it doesn't.
Politics
no.
that we expect in America.
No, sir. You have hit on a major point. I mean, it isn't juvenile at all. The story is the thing. And the person that controls the story controls basically everything else, because that's all we want to know. The late, great Don Hewitt said his basic philosophy all those years through 60 Minutes and even before was, tell me a story. Tell me a story. And the White House has a story to tell. Barack Obama clearly has a story to tell. But right now, that story is not coming through loud and clear the way it should be. And that's a great question. Who is in charge? Who is in charge of crafting that story and telling it to the American people? That's the $20 zillion question, I would suspect. In the last several minutes that we have, Chris, I want to talk about the issue of race, because it is the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room, obviously. My theory is, and it's not a complicated theory, is that teabaggers, birthers, shooters, deathers, secessionists basically are all the same kind of folks. These are the people that do not accept Barack Obama as president of the United States, will not ever accept Barack Obama as president of the United States. And I think to a great extent over the last month or so, their voices have been brought forward more effectively than the voices of the people who do believe in the president's do believe in Barack Obama as president of the United States and believe in the presidency of the United States and what it stands for. I saw one woman at one of these Texas secession rallies lamenting the fact of Michelle Obama's 26 assistants. These people don't accept Barack Obama as president of the United States because he's a black man, and they never will. And I'm wondering why we don't see more commentary that speaks directly to that issue. And because I think to a great extent we have to dismiss those voices, because they are who they are, and they're going to be who they are, but they're being given political legitimacy, I believe, by media outlets who need, as you say, need to constantly spark the conversation.
Think about Glenn Beck and the Color of Change situation, where they're basically taking aim at all of his advertisers. Up until the time they started that, these people were paying lots of money for Glenn Beck to sit on TV and talk about poisoning Nancy Pelosi or his racist president.
Right.
Basically anything he wanted to say that was derogatory or racially based.
Yep.
Lynn Jenkins, the woman in Kansas who had that comment about the Great White Hope.
Right.
I actually wrote about it on my blog. I said, you know, she's right. That is what a certain subset of the Republican Party is looking for. They need a Great White Hope because Barack Obama is not normal. Things don't look right in the White House. They don't want to do anything that has to do with him being in charge. They want to take back the country.
Sure.
That's what they tell you. The thing, the irony for me in this whole thing that probably personalized it the most, remember the black guy with the AR-15
yes.
they had on TV for a few days?
Yes.
They had did the interview and they found out it was a radio stunt, but he still is the person who feels pretty strongly about opposing Barack Obama. His name is Christopher Broughton. In news reports, they call him Chris Broughton. Now, I thought about that. I said,
wow.
Hey, you know, this particular guy is totally opposed to the kinds of things I stand for.
Right.
And the rally that I went to, I put my name on one of their sign-in sheets. And that particular rally, the person who organized it gave me a call a few days later. She said, when I first saw your name, I wondered if you were that guy.
Wow.
So I hope nothing happens with him in the future because...
Yeah, man. That would not be a good look for you, brother. But Chris, man, the time has run out. I'm glad we had this conversation, and clearly it shows me that we're going to have several more because we're just scraping the surface, man. And we're just scraping the surface, and we're going to keep talking about this. We're going to have you back, Chris, and I appreciate you taking time to talk to us this week.
Not a problem. I'm sure you and I will both eagerly be watching the president's address next week.
Absolutely.
To see what he tells us he's ready to do.
Yep.
Sean's always great to talk with you.
Thank you, brother. Chris Broughton, syndicated blogger of Chicago Sun-Times, the brown man thinking hard. We're going to go to a break. You're listening to the WEAA Afro First Edition. Stay tuned.